We're going to continue, I guess, Ben, at least maybe Tzvi will join, maybe Shmuel will join us. We're up to, if you have this printout, on the bottom of page 249 on the left.
Okay.
No, I just have it.
And there's a paragraph that starts V'nira. So let's just summarize what we have. There were a number of different Rashis in Masechta Beitza. One Rashi seem to indicate that mukta is doraisa and is based on the pasuk vechinu es asher yaviv. So the lack of hachana generates mukta. Another Rashi, and this is on Daf Yud Aleph, going on to Yud Beis in Beitza, indicates that the reason for the isur mukta is because of hotza, as a gzeira d'rabbanan, that if we allow him to move things around, then ultimately he will carry something into Rishus HaRabim. How do we reconcile the two? So based on the Iglei Tal, and also before him, the Chassam Sofer, we came to the conclusion that there are two dimensions to Mukta, fundamentally different one from the other. One is what we call an Iser Shimush, or an Iser Achila, and that's Do'oraisa, because the Torah says that anything that you want to use on Shabbos or on Yom Tov has to be prepared before. And then we have an Issa Tiltil, which we said, according to the Sam Sof, was a Gzera instituted by Nehemiah at the time of Nehemiah, as recorded in the Gemara and Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Mipes. That's an Issa Tiltil Dirabbanan. It was never included under Vichinu as Asher Yaviu. And what the Rabbanan are doing is they're extending Mukta from Achila to include Tiltil as well. And the reason they're doing that is because they're afraid you'll be violating Hotzah. So when Rashi discusses Muktzah Doraisa, he's talking about Achila, he's talking about Shimush, he's talking about Vechinu Es Asher Yaviu, that whatever you want to use and benefit from on Yontif, on Shabbos, you have to prepare before Shabbos, before Yontif. And that's why Rashi says that Migudis Katsoy Lebein Hashmashos is Katsoy Lekul Yoma, means the Hachon has to come before you enter into Shabbos, before you enter into Yontif. Once you are lacking that Hachana, it becomes Muktzah for the entire balance of Shabbos and Yontif. On the other hand, the Rashi on Daf Yud Aleph, and we'll see this also on Daf Yud Beis in Masechta Beitza, where Rashi identifies Muktzah as an Iser Derabbanan Gzeira Mishum Hotzah, that's referring to the Iser Tiltil Muktzah, and that's only Derabbanan. Now, to take this a little bit further, he says the following, that really, in truth, these two laws, or these two categories of mukta, are encoded in the Mishnayos. And if you're careful about reading the Mishnayos, you'll see it almost clearly in front of your eyes. Because he says that, if you take a look at Beitza Daf Yud Beis, and Asugin Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, it also appears later on in Beitza, and the Raivin and the Ramach bring those sugyas, you'll see that there it's clear that Tiltul is Litzorech Hotzah. Rashi says that Mukta is because of Hachana, the lack of Hachana. That's already a different Mishnah. That's a Mishnah on Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis with regard to Shemen Hametaftef Mehaner. So you have a ner that was lit on Erev Shabbos, and now you want to collect the shemen and use the shemen. The Mishnah says, Eino min amuchan. Clearly, the Mishnah is talking about the lack of hachana. We'll see the same phrase in another Mishnah later on in Masechta Shabbos, on Daf Kuf Nun Vav Amid Beis, with regard to an animal that died on Shabbos, and its carcass is nevela. And the Mishnah establishes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that it's mukta, even though it was alive going into Shabbos, but nevertheless that's called mukta machmas isur, because you're not allowed to benefit from this animal, you're not allowed to ride the animal, whatever you're not allowed to do. And therefore the Mishnah says that it's eno bin amuchan. Here also, he wants to benefit from the animal. He's not going to eat it himself, but maybe he'll feed it to his dog. And he's not allowed to do that, says the Mishnah, because of Eino Min HaMuchan. So both in the Mishnah on Daf Mem Beis, in the case of Shemen Shemetavtev, and in the Mishnah on Daf Kufnun Vavamid Beis in the Mishnah of Behemer Nevelish and Isnabla B'Shabbos. In both cases, we're talking about Einu Min HaMuchan. That's because he wants to allow himself to use the object, to use the Shemen for his purposes, to use the Nevela to feed the dog. It's Einu Min HaMuchan. Aye, what about the Mishnayis that we quoted earlier that indicate that Tiltul is because of Hotzah, meaning the reason why it's prohibited to move this around is because Hotzah. That's a different level. That's already a Gzera Mishum Hotzah, and that's an Isa Tiltul. So when the Mishnah wants to talk about Shimush, that you're benefiting from it, you're going to use this oil for your salad, or you're going to take this Nevel and feed it to your dog, the Mishkan is going to point out that you're lacking in Hachana. And as we said in Rashi, that's an Isa Doraisa. But the other Mishnayis, when they talk about Tiltul Oto Hotzah, they're talking about an Isa Drabon of Tiltul. And that's what he writes here, that Lefi HaChronim, according to all that we saw in the name of the Chasam Sofer, in the name of the Nesivus, in the name of the Iglital, we can always reconcile the Mishnayis by saying, Kan, those Mishnayis that mention Hotzah, and a shvus for Hotzah, be Isa Tiltul, they're referring to Tiltul. Kan, the other Mishnayis, which refer to Einu Min HaMuchan, those reflected Isa Shimush, which is really Doraisa, as in the cases of Shemen and Nevel. So this paragraph here, Dibra Maskel V'Nira, really, in a sense, takes everything that we said until now in our framework for Muktzah and applies it to the Mishnayis. So this is the way we can take all the Mishnayis and classify them. Now, he adds an etziv. Now, just to give you a little background, I'm sure you're familiar with this, but just in case, Rav Achai Gon, one of the Gaonim, that's before the Rishon, he wrote a collection of what you might call brisos almost, even though the Gaonim are not capable of writing brisos, they have to chasimus and talmud, but, and it's called the Shiltos. Shiltos de Rav Achai Gon. Now, up until, I'd say, about 100 years ago, or a little bit more, the Shiltos was a sefer that was collecting dust on the shelves. It wasn't that frequently used. But the great Netziv Mivalojin, the Rosh Hashiva, he wrote a super commentary on the Shiltos. It's called Emek HaNetziv. And as Emek She'el, I should say. And as a result of his commentary, the Shiltos became a common use sefer. And the Netziv points out that if you look in the Shiltos, you'll see that he holds that Muktzah is min HaTorah. And the Netziv asks the obvious question, what do you mean Muktzah min HaTorah? The Gemara says all over the place that Tiltul is the Tzor Chotzah, meaning they had to prohibit Tiltul because of Chotzah, and it's only an Isid Rabbanon. And the Netziv says exactly what we would have anticipated based on everything that we saw. That the Shiltos, when he talks about the Isid Muktzah min HaTorah, he's referring not to the Isid Tiltul, but rather, as you'll see on the top of your next page, to the Isra Achila. And that's an Isra Doraisa. However, all the sources and all the Gemaras that indicate that Tiltul is only Drabanan, those are referring to the Isra Tiltul. And once again, we come back to the same point that we began with, that there are fundamentally two different Isurim in Muktzah. We're going to go on with this Netziv, but keep in mind that in the paragraph down the line, Dibra Masel Ach Yesh, we're going to have the Shittas Ramban, and that's going to give us a little bit of a headache because the Ramban is apparently not working with the same premises that we've been working with. The Netziv writes that according to Rashi, now this is a Rashi that we don't have, it's a Rashi quoted by the Shita Mekubetzes at the beginning of Beitza, Muktzah La'achila Hu Da'oraisa. So that extra word lachila is very critical, and it fits in beautifully with everything we've been saying.
And we can make a deal that therefore Tiltul is not.
Sure. Correct. If Rashi is focused on achila, and he says that's the rice, and he derives from the pasuk Vayichinu as Asher Yaviu, obviously Rashi is excluding Tiltul. Now, there's something that was published not long ago from manuscripts called Tosis Chachmei Anglia. And at the end of Masechta Beitza, there he has this Rashi in its full-blown form. And And the Tosus expand on this Rashi, and they hold that the Isra Achil of Muktzah is Doraisa, derived from Veichinus Asher Yaviu, quoting Rabba that we saw at the beginning of Masechta Beitza. The Savar, and according to Tosus Chachmei Anglia, Lo Chazav, or Rashi never changed his mind about this. But the Isra Tiltul is only Durabana because the Tiltul Tzorech Hotza. Okay, all this is before the Ramban. Now we have the Ramban. You know, the Ramban wrote a magnificent work called the Milchames Hashem, which is published on the Rif. And in his commentary at the beginning of Masechta Beitza, it seems that he doesn't make this distinction between Achila and Tiltul. He combines them both together. And he assumes that the Isra Achila of Muktzah and the Isra Tiltul of Muktzah are all one entity. And if that be the case, the question that we raised before about the Stirin Mishnayis, that sometimes the Mishnah says Einu Min HaMuchan, and then sometimes the Mishnah says Tiltul Litzorech Hotzah Ninhu, which sounds like it has nothing to do with Hochana, it's just the Gzeira Atu Hotzah. How do we reconcile those Mishnayis? Meaning, up until the Ramban, we were doing well. We felt that our feet were standing on solid ground. And we were distinguishing over and over again between Muktzah L'Achila on the one hand, and there it's Einu Min HaMuchan, and Muktzah L'Tiltul, which is a Gzeira Atu Tiltul. It's only Drabbanan. But now the Ramban is combining both of these into one entity of Muktzah. Both Achila and Tiltul belong to one entity, which the Ramban codifies in his opening comment in Masechta Beitza and the Milchames Hashem. What are we going to do with these Mishnayis that seem to be blowing out of two sides of the mouth, blowing two different shofros? So let's take a look at the language of the Ramban, because if we are careful about reading the language of the Ramban, we might get a little bit of an insight as to how the Ramban is going to understand the relationship between the absence of Hachana and the Gzeira Atu Otsa. How does that integrate to form one whole? They seem to be two distinct reasons. One, Doraisa, derived from the Pasuk Vechinu, and the other is Derabbanan, as a classical Shavuos. The Ramban says, V'chol ikar lo dibru chachomi b'mukta, El Kidesh Yivrar Vyasmin Liatzmo Tsrachov Mi Erev Yont. The entire discussion and the motivation of the Chachamim to establish Muktzah is to force a person, to, in a sense, compel a person to choose what he wants for Yontif. Again, the Ramban mentions Yontif only because he's introducing Masechta Beitza, which is a Masechta of Yontif. Had he spoken about Shabbos, he would have said Shabbos. The Yasmin Liatzmo, he has to designate for himself Tzrachav, whatever he needs for Yontif, May Erev Yontif. And why is this so? So again, notice that the Ramban is not mentioning anything about a Doraisa here. So the Ramban is not on Rashi's page. The Ramban is not willing to accept that Muktzah is Doraisa. Now it could be that, you know, that Rashi is saying it in Shitas Rabba, and the Ramban is rejecting Rabba because there are so many other sugyas that seem to reject Rabba and hold and maintain that Muktzah is Derabbanan. I don't know. Meaning, I'm not sure that the Ramban would get, you know, would be up in arms against Rashi, because it could be Rashi's only saying it according to Rabba. I don't know. But in any event, the Ramban's structure or framework of Muktzah is it's all Derabbanan. And the Derabbanan were the ones who required us to choose and designate for ourselves that which we need for Yontif on Erev Yontif. And why did they do such a thing? Why would the Chachamim stand up and make this takana, forcing, compelling us to single out and designate whatever we want to use on Yontif? Well, what, you know, the Israelis would say, Manech Naslam is a juk parosh. You know, what would motivate them to say such a thing? And here the Ramban says the following. Kidei shelo yitztarech lachzor v'litroch b'shabbos v'yontif. If you haven't prepared what you need for Shabbos and Yontif, you're going to have to I don't know what word I could use in English. You're going to have to scrounge around. We'll use that word. You know, you got to get, you know, get all energized here and then try to figure out, you know, where do I find it, and where do I, you know, what closet it is in, and what do I want to wear on Shabbos, what do I want to wear on Yom Tov. It's a whole production. And then as a result, lasos ba malacha. By getting all involved in looking for that which you want to use, you might find something that is designated to do a malach. Like, for example, the Ramban might have in mind here what we call a klisha malach tole iser, a musical instrument, perhaps a shearing knife that's used to shear the wool off the back of the sheep. You know, whatever it might be, lasos ba malach. You know, if Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov, he goes around and he designates everything that he needs for Shabbos and Yom Tov, he's not going to include things which he knows he can't use on Shabbos and Yom Tov. He's an intelligent person. He's knowledgeable. He knows what's allowed on Yom Tov, what's not allowed on Yom Tov. And if he designates the shearing knife, it's not for the sake of shearing the wool off the back of the sheep, but rather he needs it to cut his meat or something along that line. So we're going to avoid any involvement in running around trying to find this and find that, and maybe he'll find something which mentally he knows is or subconsciously he realizes is for a malacha, and then he'll mistakenly use it for a malacha. Oh, and here the Ramban mentions tiltul ha'asar lo, which I think he's referring to ha'otzah. So it's fascinating here. The Ramban is telling us, which something that never, l'chora, never should have crossed our minds, it's not something intuitive that you and I would have come up with, that if you designate something for use on Shabbos and Yom Tov, all the chances are that you'll use it locally in your own backyard, meaning in your own kitchen or your own bedroom. You're not going to take it out into Rishus HaRabim. But once you haven't designated it before Shabbos, and then you're involved in this whole production of trying to find, you know, what you need and what you don't need, you know, maybe you'll start looking elsewhere and carrying things around. And then the Ram says, "V'samchu le'mikra v'hichinu." That's called an asvachta, because again, the Ramban sheet is that we're talking about an isur d'rabbanan. And what's the need to quote hachana, which is a pasuk in Chumash in Parshas B'Shalach, and the Mishnah quotes the pasuk in Chumash by saying that there was no hachana. Einam in amuchan was the language of the Mishnah. Obviously, alluding to this pasuk. The answer is that pasuk is just an asmachta. It's not that the Torah itself is telling you have to prepare and designate Erev Yom Tov for Yom Tov. There are one of the ones who instituted that requirement. And the entire thrust of muktzah, which requires you to prepare something, is to guarantee, so to speak, that you'll avoid doing a malacha. Whether it's in general malacha, any of the malachas on the list of 39, or specifically Frahotzah. So this is an amazing psychology here, which I honestly still don't have a total grasp on. He's saying that Rabbanon understood psychologically that if they can get you to prepare everything before Yom Tov, make all your choices, you know, take all your clothes out, lay them out on the bed, then chances are you won't do any malach. And again, in the case of clothing, that's a little bit less obvious. But what about the case of various kelim, different utensils and vessels, some of which generally are designated and might bring you to do a malach, that is designated for a malach? Or let's say, for example, something that you may want to move around, take it inside and take it outside. Like, for example, let's say you had an overabundance of furniture. You may be tempted on Shabbos, you know, to forget yourself and take it outside. And then you crossed over the line, you know, the boundary line over into Rishus HaRab. And all these issues of avoiding malach on Shabbos are solved by hachan, by preparing it before Yom Tov, before Shabbos. Ubir adavar al pima sher einu mekam mekom sheish hevdel bein hanidon madu tiknu chazal mashe tiknu levein hanidon ma tiknu. Okay. Let me try to explain that line. There's a reason for the Chachamim to establish something, and then there's the establishment itself, meaning there's the motivation, why did the Chachamim feel that they had to make this takona, and then there's the Geder HaTakona, meaning the presentation, the formulation, the definition of the takona itself.
It's like the disease and the cure.
So he says the following, that if you're asking the question, what motivated Chazal, why did they make this takona? The answer is that they were afraid of molach. They were afraid that you would violate and desecrate the Shabbos. Let's say, for example, let's take Hotzah. They have a problem because they see that Jews, unfortunately, whether deliberately or hopefully not deliberately, inadvertently, they violate the Isra Hotzah. So the Rabbanim have a problem. It's on the table. You know, the rabbis get together, they have a meeting of the Gedolei HaTorah, and they decide, we have to solve this problem. We have to protect the Jewish people and rein them in so they don't violate Moleches Hotzah. That's the motivation. That's what you would call the Sibas HaTakon, or the Tam HaGzeirah. But now we have to know, what is the Takon itself? What did the Rabbanon formulate? What requirement did they impose upon Klal Yisrael? What was the essence and the substance of the takana? Not the reason for the takana, but the formulation and the substance of the takana. And the answer is that the takana was hachana, that you have to prepare. So when the rabbis got together and they said, how do we solve this problem? How can we minimize the occasion of violation of Hotzah? What can we institute? And the vote was, let's institute Hachana. We got to prepare. The more you prepare for Shabbos, the more you prepare for Yontif, the more you are guaranteed that you'll observe the Shabbos and Yontif meticulously, and you won't start getting involved in what the Ramban calls lachzar v'litroch b'shabbos. You know, this chazara, scrounging around, looking here, looking there, tircha, you know, your brain is all overwhelmed by this responsibility and this, you know, this discovery kind of thing, you know. What is that game that they play sometimes at parties and stuff, you know, where you have to find the treasure? You know, you go from one hint, one clue to the other. What's it called? There's a name for it. You know, a lot of youngsters play that game. You know, so
like a scavenger hunt.
Scavenger hunt, maybe. He says you're going to go into a scavenger hunt. You know, you're overwhelmed. You know, people came to visit you, and now you got to find this, you got to find that. You're in a state of Bahala, and now, you know, like that case that we discussed where the fire is coming and Nebuchadnezzar might burn up his mess, so he goes and he puts out the fire. He says that when you're in the state of Tircha and you're looking around, how can I supply my needs on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because I didn't think this all out beforehand, in that state of Tircha, of Bahola, you might very well violate a Malach, and especially Otzah, which is something that's so easy to violate. So to minimize the occasion of those violations, they made a takon of hachon. And the asmachta for the Rabbanon was the pasuk v'echidu es asher yaviv. But that was all an asmachta de Rabbanon. You know what an asmachta is. You know, when the Rabbanon want to hang their hat on a peg, and they quote a pasuk in Tanakh, but that pasuk doesn't mean what the Rabbanon are using it for. They just use it as a device, almost. The truth is that asmachta might be even more profound than that. It could be that, you know, there are different levels of understanding the Torah. There's pshat, remez, drush, and sod. And it could be that on a deeper level, it's not just an asmachta, you know, it's just an excuse. But it really means that there is another interpretation of that pasuk, that you have to prepare for Shabbos and Yom Tov. Ve'chinu es asher yaviv. And therefore he says the following, that if you look in the Ritva, he quotes the Ramban that there are no two different Isurim, meaning Achila and Tiltul, it's all one package, but there are different reasons for the Gzera. For example, you may say that in the case of Achila, The reason for the gzeira is that if you don't prepare for Shabbos, you might be tempted to cook something on Shabbos. And in the case of tiltul, if you didn't prepare it before Shabbos, you might be tempted to carry it and violate Melechas Hotzah. So there's going to be a lot of background here in terms of the Iser Tiltul and the Iser Achila, but it's all one Iser. And it's all rabbinic in nature, and the injunction was that we have to have Hachana before Yontif, before Shabbos. Now, if you take a look at the Ksam Sofer, Yesh lahakshos that Ksam Sofer omisha Iser shal Hachana nismach al vehichinu v'Iser Tiltul asur otu hotzah migzeres nechemi ben chachalya. So let's just reiterate what we said, not according to the Ramban, but according to some Sofer, that there are two different Isurim, and they're fundamentally different one from the other. One is the Isur Achana, and that generates the requirement of Achana, which generates an Isur of using something on Shabbos and Yontif. Then there's the Isur Tiltul, which is purely Gzeirah to Otsah. The Kasha, this is very difficult, because the Ksam Sofer assumes that historically, at what point in Jewish history did the Iser Tiltul emerge? It was at the time of Nehemiah ben Chachalia. Well, wait a minute. David HaMelech was way before Nehemiah. And we find in the Gemara in Shabbos Taf Lamed that already back at the time of David and Shlomo HaMelech, David had already died, but at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, there was already an Iser Tiltul Muktzah. You know, we're really going back in a time machine to the early days of Jewish history. And the Gemara in Shabbos tells us the following story. When David HaMelech died, it was Shabbos. By the way, that has philosophical implications. But David HaMelech dies on Shabbos. Shlomo asks the Chachamim, what do we do? We have the mess, we have the corpse of my father David, and that's Muktzah. And Muto Bachama, and it's sitting, the corpse is laying in the sun, it's going to smell. And they answered him, take a kikar or a tinok, and put it on top of the body, and then you can be metaltal it. Obviously, they were not excited about tiltul muktzah, they had to find a... working around avoiding the Iser Muktzah, Tiltul Muktzah, and this is way before Nehemiah. So I'm also just to present the following objection against
Tiltul or Hotza'ah, maybe.
Well, they just want to get him out of the sun, and they're talking about the Iser Tiltul because, you know, if you're talking about Hotzah, the Kikar and the Tinok is not going to help you.
Yeah.
Right? Kikar and Tinok is only going to solve your problem of the Iser Tiltul Muktzah, but you see clearly that the Iser Tiltul Muktzah predates Nehemiah. How can the Tzam Sofer insist that this was a Gzeira that was generated by Nehemiah? So now what we have to do is we have to take the Iser Muktzah and break it down into its component parts. The Iser Muktzah in the Gemara and Shabbos with regard to a corpse is one category of the Iser Tiltul Muktzah, and then the Ksam Sofer, when he talks about Nehemiah, he's talking about a different category of an Iser Tiltul Muktzah. Now before I read the next paragraph, I could already tell you where we're going. I mean, truth is I already read it, but even had I not read it, you have to trust me on that, I would have come up with the following idea. Nehemiah is talking about Kalim. He's not talking about what we call Mukta Machmas Gufo. If you go back to the first page that we gave out here, which was the Beis Yosef's introduction to Mukta, you remember that there were six categories of Mukta. The first of which was Mukta Machmas Gufo, which is something that doesn't have any shimush at all. That's the case of a corpse. And that's going to be the original Iser Tiltul, which David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech had to contend with. Then we had another category, which was number 5 on the list, was a kli shemalachta le'iser. That's already kalim. Kalim is something that has definite function. The Rabbanan can tell you you're not allowed to move a kli in the case of a kli shemalachta le'iser, but that's already a whole different category of muktzah. That's an Iser Tiltul, which is purely a gzera. And that was instituted by Nehemiah ben Chachalia. Let's see if it works out. If it doesn't work out, I'll be disappointed. But I think that should be the way that we go here. So he mentions the machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in Muktzah. At the beginning of Parakol Kalim, the Mishnah establishes that a klisha malachta le'isa also l'taltalo. In other words, let's say, for example, you have a sledgehammer, which is used by a carpenter for making tables, and it got stuck in the sun, and that's not good for it. So you want to take it away from the sun and hide it in the shade. You're not allowed to do that. The Mishnah says, "Asul taltal." The only time you're allowed to move a kli shemalachta le'isur is litzorech. There's a printing error there, a typo. It should say litzorech gufo umakoma. And now the question arises: what would Reb Shimon say about that Mishnah? After all, Reb Shimon lesle mukta. Should we say that he accepts this isur of tiltal kli shemalachta le'isur? L'chora, we would say that it's not so. You know, Reb Shimon doesn't have to agree because he denies mukta. And the answer might be, to our surprise, and this is going to be the sheet of Tosfos with regard to Chatzotzros, which is going to be Tosfos on the, you'll see it on the top left column here on Daf Lamed Vav, that even Reb Shimon would agree to this category of mukta. The reason why Reb Shimon disagrees with other categories of mukta is because he never rejected it Erev Shabbos. He never put it away and completely pushed it out of his radar screen, out of his league of use. He always has in the back of his mind, says Reb Shimon, that maybe he'll use it. But now we have the case of a kli shemalachta le'isur. And a klisha malachta le'isur is designated to be used for something that's prohibited on Shabbos. And he didn't do anything on Erev Shabbos to indicate otherwise that he wants to use it for something else. It's unbelievable. The Gemara has cases of musical instruments which have a clay keyboard to it. Like, for example, a trumpet. You know, it's wide on one end and it's narrow on the other end. The narrow end goes into your mouth to blow. And the Gemara says that sometimes you actually use it as a kli, almost like a funnel, in order to pour something in that'll come out on the other side. So the Gemara says if you designate it for such on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif, you're okay. Otherwise, it's a kli shemalachta le'isur, it's a musical instrument, you're not allowed to use it. And Tosfos, to our surprise, says that Rav Shimon is moder, that in the case of kli shemalachta le'isur, there's an isur tiltal. So we see at least that there's one category of isur tiltal, in the case of kli shemalachta le'isur, which is codified in the Mishnah at the beginning of Kol Kalim, which is a separate category. It breaks away from the normal regulations that govern mukta, because Rav Shimon is mekel in mukta. He allows you to move mukta in a case where you did have some sort of possible use for the object, and you didn't even think that all out Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif. But here in the case of a kli shemalachta le'isur, which is designated for isur, Reb Shimon is moda, says Tosfos. And the Ran, at the beginning of Parakira, he says that Tosfos is right, a kli shemalachta le'isur is asur l'taltlo gam l'fi Rabbi Shimon. And why? Says the Ran, vadei nira dafiu l'Reb Shimon, the lesle mukta modahu bekelim shemalachton le'isur shem asurim l'taltel michama l'tzel. You're not allowed to protect the object by moving it from the sun into the shade. Again, unless you're moving it l'tzar gufo l'tzar makomo. The lav mishum mukta nagu bahen. Do you have this underlined? It's line on the left column here on page 250. It's line 5. At the end of the line, it says, the lav mishum mukta nagu bahen. It's not underlined. So can you do me a favor and underline that? Because that's the punchline here, this Ran. I have here a pencil if you need one. I'll give you a pen.
This is in the left column?
On the left column, on page, are you on page 250?
Yes.
On the left column, if you count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the last word in the line is the lav. On the top of the left column, going down 5 lines. Oh, we're getting hot. This is like my kids are looking for the Afrikomen. You know, you're getting closer.
So 5 lines more.
The end of that line.
What's the last word on the line?
That's the one. That's the word I want you to underline. Dilav.
Ah, okay, got it. Sorry.
And then I want you to underline the next 5 words on the next line. Mishum mukta nagu behem. And the Ran is telling us something mind-boggling. He's saying that the Iser of Tiltal with regard to Eklisha Malachta Iser is not Mukta. Don't make a mistake about it. That's not Mukta. Which is going to fit beautifully with the Chassam Sofer that we're trying to defend, that it's a Gzeir of Nechemya ben Chachalya that's codified in the Mishnah at the beginning of Kol HaKelim. That's a separate category. That's not Mukta. You and I think it's Mukta, but it's not. And the proof of the pudding is that you're allowed to move it Litzok Gufa, Litzok Makoma, which is not true in the case of Mukta. Ugzera Bifnei Atzma. It's a separate Gzera. Again, he doesn't mention Nechemya, but we'll mention Nechemya, or the Chassam Sofer will mention Nechemya. Ela Tiltul Hu Sha'asru B'Shabbos B'Dvarim She'ein Tashmishan Rogil U'Mishum Hotzahu She'gozru Kira Isa L'Kamon B'Pirkin Tiltul Tzorech Hotza. It means that the din of Klisha Malach Tal Yisur is not a subcategory of Mukta. After all, he wasn't Makzit Midaito. Let's say, for example, if he needs this sledgehammer, this carpenter needs it in order to crack open his walnuts. But even though it's not Mukta in the classical sense, but Gzera Bifnei Atzma, it's a separate Gzera Mishum Otsa. And this is the Gzera of Nechemya ben Chachalya, who initially prohibited all Kalim except for 3 absolutely necessary Kalim. Then he loosened his belt, he allowed other Kalim that you could move. But all this was not because of Mukta, says the Ran. It was a separate Gzera. And who accepts this Gzera? Who rejects Mukta but accepts this Gzera? That's going to be Rabbi Shimon. I'm getting this overwhelming fear that you're not following me, because I'm not hearing any response whatsoever. Is my intuition correct, Ben?
No, you
look totally like you're blank. I'm getting a blank stare. I don't know if your brain is elsewhere. You're preparing for your daughter's bat mitzvah. I don't know what you're doing here. Okay. Can you come back to earth? Earth to Ben Goldfarb.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm
my friend Yuri got a little nervous because he, when I sent him this forwarded your email, it said Zahavi on it. He had no clue who Zahavi was. Oh, and I told him, because we had a Skype show yesterday, I told Ben Goldfarb, now I know who you're talking about. Are you following? This is critical because what was seen. Can you feed it back to me? Yeah.
Here's what I'm. What
and
I'm
calm doing. Me down.
It looks like we have David and Mel, the Holy Spirit of David and Melch, but we already had that in Nechemya, which was much later. But now we're making a distinction. Nechemya is dealing with Kalim, and here we're dealing with Tzrich Gufo, which David and Melch is Tzrich Gufo. So there's a distinction between those two.
I'm not sure if I understood what you're saying. Did you say Tzrich Gufo?
It's basically the first category here where there's no shimush involved.
Correct. Excellent. Okay.
Musa
machmas gufa.
Sorry. Okay.
Because you say tzrich legufa, that's going to confuse us.
No.
That, yeah.
Musa machmas gufa.
Okay.
So since we're distinction between 2 different time periods and 2 different concepts, we're okay.
So the Iser of Tiltal in Mukta machmas gufa predates Nechemya.
Yes.
And that's part of Mukta Mamish. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the whole Sugya Mukta, which means you're not allowed to move it. Even Litzok Gufo, Litzok Makomo. Maybe we'll find a Heter of Kikar Otinok. And then later on in history, Nechemi comes along and he makes a Gzer of Kalim.
And that Gzer of Kalim is not connected to Mukta.
Correct. It's a separate Issa because until Nechemi came along, all Kalim were Mukta.
Okay.
Even Eklisha Malach Tal Issa was Mukta. And the reason for that is because a carpenter's hammer could be used to crack nuts. And if you remember Reb Shimon Shita, Reb Shimon holds that, let's go into his subconscious mind and ask what would his subconscious mind say about a situation if the following situation arose and you didn't have anything to crack your nuts, where would you find the hammer? And he says, oh, I go into my shed because I have a carpenter's budka over there, and I would take out the sledgehammer. So that's enough from Rav Shimon's perspective to give us the hachana that we need to remove muktzah. And that's Rav Shimon Leslie Muktzah. Now we're talking about a whole different thing. The Ran says that when we get to this mission of Kalim, which certainly would not come under muktzah, because every kli, even if it's designated for Issa, you might want to use it. And sometimes even a trumpet could be used in order to pour water into it as a receptacle. That would not be muktzah. But we're afraid, says Nechemiah ben Chaim. Too much movement here. And we're afraid that once you start moving things, you'll end up carrying it out into Rishus HaRav. That's a new Gzera Atu Hotzah, an Issa Tiltul. And it's an Issa Tiltul that operates with its own rules and regulations. L'chum and L'kula. L'chum and the fact that Rav Shimon would not include this on the books, and therefore it should have been Mutar. That's the chumra that it's usher, even though muktzah in general is mutter, according to Rav Shimon. And the kula is that whereas muktzah you're allowed to move, you're not allowed to move under any circumstances, unless you're moving something else, and agav that, or minatzad, and all that stuff. But there's no heter to move a muktzah mamish, that means muktzah machmas gufo. But here, we're going to be making. I'm going to allow you to move it litzar gufo, litzar makomo, many different situations in which you're allowed to move it. This is very exciting, because to me, what this means is that the Chasam Sofer is not going to have any problem with the sugya of David HaMelech after he died, because that's already a sugya of muktzah mamash. That has nothing to do with Nechemiah. And when the Chasam Sofer insists that Nechemiah came up with a brand new category and a new gzera atu tiltul, atu otzah, tiltul atu otzah, he's referring to Kalim, which are not muktzah, according to Rav Shimon. But there's a separate gzera and an isa tiltul of a klisha malachal isa. And Rav Shimon himself, says the Ran Mefurish, Lehedra, will accept that gzera. And the reason for that is because it's a gzera b'fnei atzma, mishum otzah. He says that you'll find the same thing in the Ritva on Daf Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, that the law of kli shemalachta le'iser applies even according to Rav Shimon, the kelim shemalachta le'iser lo midi mukta nagulehen le'iser, right? Kelim shemalachta le'iser is not mukta, certainly not according to Rav Shimon. El tiltul hu shall asru, and again if you want to add a few words, shall asru liachar David HaMelech, you know, much later than David HaMelech, as a gzera mishum otzah. Ukeshem shegazru bimei Nechemiah ben Chachal yafilu bikelim shemalachta leheta. Well, again, you know, Nechemiah in his original takana wanted to prohibit moving even a kli shemalachta leheta, with the exception of three kelim, you know, a knife, spoon, and a fork that he needs to eat with. And this ritva is against the Beis Yosef, because we started our discussion here a few days ago with the Beis Yosef's overview of six categories of muktzah. And amongst the six, he's got a kli shemalachta leheta. Kli shemalachta leheta is not muktzah. It doesn't belong in this listing. It's min b'she'eino mino. Now, I'm not sure if he means to say that the Beis Yosef apparently disagrees with everything we've been saying, and kli shemalachta leheta becomes muktzah. Or, alternatively, the Beis Yosef is giving us a broader overview of muktzah, even with regard to Nisa Tilta that's not muktzah. And if you take a look at the Beis Yosef himself that we started with, when he gets to Kli Shemalachta Le'isur, he says, Kigon Kurdus Shal Nefachim She'ikro Le'molocha Asura Ach B'Shas HaTzorach Mefatzea Bo Egozim. I don't know, I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, but it sounds like he himself, the Beis Yosef, is aware of the fact that he might be able to move this muktzah, which undermines the law of muktzah, that contradicts muktzah. So it could be that the Beis Yosef himself realizes that this is not exactly muktzah. I would have been happier if he would have listed Klisha Malachalisa says number six. You know, it's like a postscript, but you know, he has number six is Bosses Ledover also. That's real Mukta. And then he says the following: Ayin Begura Behilchas Mila. Now, Rabosai, my original plan for today's shiur was to continue in the Gemara. But I'm thinking out loud, and you'll tell me if you think I'm right, that maybe we should leave the Gemara for Yom Rishon because a number of our members are not here today. I can think offhand of four members of our group who are absent today. Am I right? Meaning if you count Harvey and you count Don and you count Svi and David and then my friend Yehuda's not on Skype, so
he is on Skype?
Oh, so Yehuda's on Skype. Okay, so Yehuda's with us. No, Yehuda's with us, but there are four people who are not with us.
Yeah.
And I just feel that if we go on in the Gemara, if they miss this lumbus here that we're doing, you know, they could listen to the recording or not listen to the recording, that's their decision, but they haven't missed a chunk of the syllabus. So what do you think? You think my intuition is right? All right. So whatever 15-20 minutes we have, let's try to see if we can get to the finish line here on this overview of Mukta.
Question about this?
Yes, please.
Machloka here, it seems kind of strange to me because, let's say, before we learned that Tosfot, I never thought of a chiluk between Ochlin and Totsuot. Okay, but what makes all Mukta one Iser? And why does it all have to be the same Chumrah? There are a whole range of things that the Beit Yosef said are Mukta.
Right.
And it seems to me the only thing they have in common is they have Iser Tiltul on them. And you can't do Achila without Tiltul. So then, past that point, everything seems different to me. There's Nolad, there's Mechusar Hachana, there's Melachto Le'Iser, like all kinds of, there's variations within Mukta. It's like a big category. So why are all these Rishonim and Achronim trying to say, it's all Derabbanan? No, it's all Deraita. Why can't some, and let's all, you know, take it easy, okay?
Look, the truth is that since so many sugyas and shas indicate that Mukta is Derabbanan, the burden of proof is on anyone who wants to claim that Mukta is Doraisa.
Yeah, when I first heard that, I thought it was a little bit, it's like
it's really revolutionary, it's way out.
It's not a pasuk. Ve'echinu et teshiyaviyu is talking about man. It's not it's about the Dorot. And none of the Rishonim, you know, like it's not like in the Taryag of the Rambam or something, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't really say to you, prepare everything before Shabbat. That's the strong argument of the Ramban.
But on the other hand, the Gemara starts Beitza, which quoting Rabbah, and Rabbah says that Beitza shenolda biyontif, in the case of yontif shechalios biyom rishon leachar Shabbos, is ein Shabbos mechino liyontif, and he quotes the pasuk vechino asher yaviu. It sounds like he's dealing with the Doraisa, and Rashi in fact goes down that road. Now the question is this a you know, a kind of a spiral that keeps spinning and keeps generating.
I have a worse question. I thought that the Ramban could be Modeh on that. Because when I learned Beitza, I didn't know all the things you mentioned here today. So, to me it seemed like there's an element of Hachana, and maybe sometimes Nolad, that's at least partially Deoraita because of Kavod Shabbat. And according to the Ramban, there's a different thing that's Doraita. Another part of...
So Shmuel, my recommendation is the following. If you'll allow me, let's do everything kiseder. You know, I'm looking at my clock. It's already almost 10:20. Let's hop around another 15-20 minutes, and then I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. let's just officially begin the shiur, end the shiur. Our job was, our goal was to create. All I'll say right now, in a general sense, I know this is not going to satisfy your curiosity, but Rashi is the one who makes the breakthrough. He insists that the requirement of hachana, according to Rav, is doraisa, and the question is how far we want to go with that. And it sort of had, it spirals and projects itself even further and further, that Rashi seems to assume in many different contexts that Mokta is Doraisa, not just in the case of Yontif Shachalios B'Yom Rishon, other cases where there was no Achana. And that led the Chassam Sofer to come up with his breakthrough Shita, that although all the sugyas in Mokta seem to indicate that Mokta is a rabbinic invention, Rashi holds that at least as far as Achila is concerned, Mukta is Doraisa, and that's the discussion at the beginning of Masechta Beitza with Rabbah, and then all the other Sugyas in Shas, and all the other Mishnayos in Shas are referring to Mukta Derabbanan as an Iser Tiltal. And that led the Chassam Sofer to this fundamental, you know, distinction, which was picked up by the Iglital, by the Nitziv. We see everybody is riding on this sfora, that there are two entities in Muktzah. There's one entity as far as Achila, and the Torah requires you, and this is Doraisa Halacha, to prepare everything before Shabbos for Yom Tov for Achila. Achila means any shimush. And then there's an Iser Tiltal, which was instituted by Nechemiah's Gzeira Mishum Hotzah. And that answers so many different caches that we have. And basically it means that the Torah is creating an Iser Chefta. As we discussed many times, Mukta is an Iser Chefta. The Rav, Zichron Livracha, built towers in the sky based on the fact that the Gemara in Beitza calls Mukta Dorosh Yesh Lo Matir, that needs a Matir. Why does it need a matir? And the Rav said, because it's a chefta d'isura. Well, a chefta d'isura means that you're using it, you're eating it. Not being metaltal, it. Being metaltal is not a chefta d'isura. That's an isa gavra. That's that you shouldn't do a maisa tiltal. So this distinction between tiltal mukta and achilas mukta is very fundamental. We saw already Tosa says that even if you hold yesh mukta l'chatzi Shabbos, that's only as far as the chefta is concerned, as far as achilas is concerned, but not as far as tiltal. Now the Ramban gives us headaches because he swallows it all up together. Achila, tiltal, it's all one Issa d'Rabbanan. Okay, that's fine. Then we had other problems because if the Chassam Sofer is right, why does he pin this Gzeirah of tiltal on Nechemiah when the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed assumes that even as early as David HaMelech's time they already knew about the Issa tiltal, which they were only able to be matir with a kikar atino? So now we're making a distinction between two categories of an Issa tiltal. There's one in Issa tiltal, which is Mukta, which would be Aser even Litzark Gufo and Litzark Makomo, and that's when you rejected something for use on Shabbos. And then we have the case of Kalim, which you didn't reject. You know, the carpenter can use his cornice in many different ways and in many different contexts. And according to Rav Shimon, it would not be Mukta. But now comes Nechemiah, and he institutes a Gzera Mishum Hotzah on Tiltal Kalim Shemalachton Le'isim. Let's go on and see if we can make some progress with the Gra. The Gra says the following. We have halacha that if you picked up mukta into your hand, then under certain circumstances, you're allowed to put it down wherever you want. It's already been picked up. See, he talks about two different cases, the Gra. Case number one, there was no Iser violated. He picked up this mukta before Shabbos. Now it became Shabbos. Or he has a second case where inadvertently he violated the Iser Mukta on Shabbos itself and he picked up Mukta. And according to many Shitos, once the Mukta is already in your hand, you don't have to drop it like a hot potato, but you can put it down wherever you choose. And the Gra, the Vilna Gaon in Yoredeya, wants to reject that opinion and assume that you can only talk about a case of Heter, where he picked up the object before Shabbos. Oh, and he says the following. Even according to those who are Mekil, and allow you to put it down wherever the heck you want, because you already picked it up, That's only with regard to a kli shemalachto le'isur. And what he's talking about is the sledgehammer, and he picked it up. How did he pick it up? A heter? After all, you're not allowed to pick up a patish. He did it lefatzech a goz, which is called litzarek gufa. And there the Gaon says, I'm willing to understand, to appreciate this shita, that we can allow you to put it down wherever you so please. And since he doesn't want to leave it in the sun, he's allowed to put it in the shade to protect it. But that's dafka klishim lachtoli isur she'eno muktzah, says the Gaon. Is therefore, since there's a heter of letaltolo letzor kufu letzor makomo, and the whole isur is only mechamel itzel, therefore, once you picked it up, you're allowed to put it down. Okay, so the Gaon says that kalim, which now we're talking about klishim lachtol isur, kalim is an isur tiltul kalim shelo letzorech shabbos. But if it's a kli shemalachtol isur, and he wants to be metaltol letzorech gufa letzorech makoma, that's called letzorech shabbos. If it's letaltol mechama letzel, that's not called letzorech shabbos. Because basically he's not using it for anything on Shabbos. He just wants to protect it so it shouldn't get ruined. And that's called saving it for after Shabbos. And then the Gaon writes, V'afilu Rav Shimon, d'lesle muktzah klal moda bazeh, d'eino machmas muktzah. Again, the Gaon is repeating what we saw in the Ran and in the Ritva, that even Rav Shimon, who rejects muktzah, agrees that there's an isa tiltul in kalim, which is not muktzah. It's a separate Easter independent of Moktza. Kmo klishim lachtol heter, just like we saw in Nehemiah instituted an Easter tiltul with regard to a klishim lachtol heter if it's shelo litzar klal, because every tiltul has to be litzarech. And in the case of a klishim lachtol Easter, the tiltul is not litzarech, meaning litzarech Shabbos. You may want to move it because you want to protect it from the beating sun, but that's not litzarech Shabbos. That's called litzarech chol. And that was the nature of this Easter. Any tiltul shelol litzar Shabbos is osur. That's what Nehemiah instituted, and that's something that even Reb Shimon would accept because that's not muktzah. V'kavanosol l'din shenifsak la'alocha shegam klishim lach leheter osur l'taltul shelol litzar klal. That's the halacha that I wanted to keep classified because we shouldn't publicize this. People don't realize that you're not allowed to stop move kalim around for just for the fun of it. You have to have a purpose. It's got to be litzar Shabbos. But it comes out, according to the Gaon, that there's a gzeiras tiltul, as long as that tiltul is called and classified as shelo letzorech hayom, it's not for the tzorech of Shabbos, and that's a gzeira that includes even a klishim lachtol heter. And the reason is because it's not letzorech Shabbos, and if it's a tiltul shelo letzorech Shabbos, it's osur, and that's a separate gzeira, and it's not muktzah, says the Vilna Gaon. And therefore the Vilna Gaon, this you'll see in the bottom paragraph, says that the din, that once you have the kli in your hand, you're allowed to continue moving it and putting it down wherever you see, you know, wherever you see fit, wherever your heart desires, hani mi, that's only kli shem lach l'isa she'ena megzeres mukta v'ashar mukta chayv lahashlich miyado tekef umiyad. So let's try to think if we can, number one, formulate the Gaon, and number two, understand the Gaon. The Gaon is saying that there's this new magical halach that once you picked up something, you can put it down wherever your heart desires. You don't have to immediately drop it. Says the Gaon, when does that heter apply? It's restricted to the case of a klisha malachto le'isur. So you have this kurnos shel nefachim, which is used by carpenters, a classical kli shemalachtol isur. So you picked it up, you shouldn't have done so. Once you did so, you're allowed to put it down wherever you want, in the shade. You'll carry it from one end of your field to the other until you finally get a shady spot. As long as you don't carry it into shasarah.
It was mutter to litzarech gufo makomo.
Right, but this is not litzarech gufo, litzarech makomo.
You picked it up, stop.
Let's say you picked it up because the sun was beating down, and you want to get into the shade. You aren't allowed to do so. We're going to allow you to put it down in the shade once you picked it up. Says the Gaon, that doesn't apply to muktzah. If you picked up muktzah inadvertently on Shabbos, you got to drop it like a hot potato. You don't have the right to decide to carry it and put it down where your heart desires. What's the difference? Says the Gaon, in muktzah, any movement of the chefetz itself, because again, muktzah is always in the chefetz, to relocate it is prohibited. So again, we're going to give you patch because you picked up the muktzah. But now get rid of it, because if you don't drop it immediately, then every step that you take to relocate the muktzah, that's also a violation of muktzah. But in the case of klisha malachto le'isur, which is only an isur gavra of a maisa tiltul, tiltul means picking it up. You did an act of picking it up. Like, for example, Melechus Hotza, the Gemara says, you're only chayef, you did the akira. You took it out of its place. You disturbed its rest. Okay, you already did that. That's done. That's history. Now take it and put it wherever the heck you want. I don't care. Carry it around. But you see clearly that the Gaon is operating with muktz on the one hand and tiltul kalim on the other hand. And tiltul kalim beats to its own drum. It has its own regulations, its own rules. And in 9 out of 10 cases, that's lakula, because it's less than muktz. It's an only nisu gavra, nisu chefta. The one case where it becomes a chumra is that even Reb Shimon, who's mekel in muktzah, would agree to the isur tiltul kalim. Now, once we have this kula, the Gaon says, it means that a maisa tiltul is asur, but when you set up the chefetz wherever you want, and you relocate the chefetz, that's not asur. For example, Rabosai, what would the Gaon say about a kurnos shel nefachim regarding tiltul min atzad? You remember that we finally concluded in our sugya daf mem gimel that tiltul min atzad shmei tiltul, which means it's awesome. What would be in the case of a klisha malachto le'isur? Here's my case. I got a pencil sitting on this gemara. Happens every Shabbos. Walk around this space medrash, and unless Rabbi Wexler went around and cleared off all the muktzah, this is what you're going to see. I need this gemara. What do I do? It's a buses for a klisha malachto le'isur. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to lift it up and let the kli fall. Why? Because we're dealing not with an isur chefta that I'm not allowed to relocate the object, and the pencil was here, now it's there. That's not the isur. The isur is the maisa tiltul. Well, tiltul ben atzad is not a maisa tiltul. And yeah, I'm not posketing, Rav Moshe. But I'm just telling you, based on all the information that's being fed into the machine, into the computer, this is what the computer is going to spit out. Had this pencil been muktzah, meaning if it wasn't a kli, let's say it was a tree, a rock, yeah, a piece of wood, I would not be allowed to do that because we posken tiltul min atzad shmei tiltul. Which means that to relocate the chefetz in a new place is awesome. Even if you did it in an unusual way. But the bottom line is, and this is a gewaldig yesod, it's one of the most important pieces of an introduction and overview of muktzah, is that tiltul kalim, in the case of a klisha malachto le'isur, is a separate gzeirah. It's not muktzah. We call it muktzah. The Beis Yosef called it muktzah, but it's not muktzah. So, for example, in the case of a boel, what's it doing in Hilchas Milah? He's got the izmul. And the Yizmul is a classical case of what's called Muktzah Machmas Chisarin Kis. And accidentally, the Baal, you know, got confused. He thought, that he has a Mila today, because, you know, Shabbos, Mila is Docha Shabbos, and then he all of a sudden he realized, no, he doesn't have a Mila today. But what did he do? When he thought he had a Mila, he picked up the Yizmul. And basically he violated Tiltul Muktzah, because he's got Muktzah Machmas Chisarin Kis. Now he says, you know what? Hey, once I got the Yizmul in my hand, now at least I can put it back in its package. And he's got this black container. Oh, no. He's got to put it down in the first place that he finds it. Because that's Muktzah Mamash. Says the Gaon, when do we have a head to the once it's in your hand, take it for a ride? You know, put it wherever you want. That's only in Tiltul Kalim. That's a klisha malachto le'isur. But if it's muktzah because it's chisaron kis, we're not talking about a pencil that you buy for 10 agorot, but we're talking about an izmol, which is a very sharp and sensitive and expensive vessel, utensil, that's already muktzah mamash.
Would it be the same if it were tefillin on top of the sefer?
Tefillin, I don't know exactly what the status of tefillin is. If you would ask me, I would say that tefillin is a kli shel malachim, so it's a kli and it's not mukta. I don't know. Somebody might argue that maybe tefillin is mukta machmas gufo. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that it might depend on whether there's an Issa to wear tefillin on Shabbos. Some say that not only are you potter for tefillin on Shabbos, but it would be a flagrant insult to Shabbos if you wore tefillin. If you don't assume like that, and the Gemara, for example, has cases where you find tefillin is not, your tefillin got left in a place that's not shomer, and how do you get it inside your house on Shabbos, this, that. The Gemara says you're allowed to put it on. Then the Gemara says, Bal Tosif, this, and he's wearing two pairs, and the whole sugya there, everything. But basically, tefillin is a malbush. It's like a kli.
Right.
It's pe'er. So I don't know. And tefillin is going to be a big sugya as far as mukta is concerned. So let's just see in 5 minutes if we can at least hop around the next paragraph. This is on the top of page 251, Ulevar Shlemus Hashitos Nireh, it's to perfect our approach and complete our presentation. He says, and there we see that there's an Issa Tiltul that predates Nehemiah. I would add the word Tiltul. Shegzeras Tiltul Mukta. Haisa Bizman Shlomo. Achila means any sort of shimush. Misrach achana because of the absence of achana. V'chein betiltul, shem yovel lahotzi. Again, this is all part of the Ramban's thesis. V'tvasef b'gzeres nechemi isa tiltul al kelim she'enom muktza. He wants to say in this next paragraph, and with this we'll close for today and for this week, that when we talk about mukta from the perspective of the Ramban and other achronim, that achila and tiltul are all part of one entity, we can still distinguish between two types of isa tiltul. In other words, even if achila and tiltul belong to one indivisible concept called an Isur Mukta, that there's tiltul and there's tiltul. There's one gzer of tiltul because of hotzah. There's another gzer of tiltul because of a violation of a malach that you might come to use a klisha malachta le'isur for that isur, for that malach. And therefore we could possibly suggest that when we're talking about Shlomo HaMelech and the Isur tiltul with regard to a mess, there we're talking about the Gzera of Hotzah. When we're talking about Nehemiah went a step further and he said, you know what, all Kalim have a problem of a Malacha if they're designated for a Malacha, which is called a Klisha Malachta Le'isa. So forget about Hotzah. Hotzah would be something more generic, and any type of tiltles theoretically could lead to hotzah. See, then the Chacham had to decide, where to put the Iser of tiltul mishum hotzah. They landed on something that's not a kli. Anything that's not a kli, we're going to asa b'tiltul. But kalim, we need kalim. That's how we live, and we live on Shabbos, no less than we live in the rest of the week. We have to allow kalim. That was as far as Hotzah is concerned. Came along Nehemiah, and he was worried about a klisha malachta le'isur, not because of Hotzah, because how can we prohibit kalim because of Hotzah? I mean, that's going to lead to a situation where you can't use kalim on Shabbos. That's absurd. But rather because of a malacha. They were afraid that if you took a kli into your hands, which is designated for a certain malacha, you might violate a malacha. That's where Nehemiah was willing to expand the Isa Tiltul to include something that's not Mukta, and that's a Klisha Malachta Le'isa. Before Nehemiah, what we had was the Isa Mishum Hotzah, and that would apply to things that have no, let's say, have no purpose, or have no were not prepared before Shabbos and Yontif. That would be a problem, but Kalim is not a problem. because kelim is for the purpose of use, and on Shabbos we have to use kelim. Comes along the Chevi and he says, wait a minute, there's certain kelim that are specifically by their very nature, their character, their personality, are designated for malach. And if we're going to allow you to start moving those kelim around, who knows? You might come to do a malach. I think that's what he's suggesting here in this paragraph. Let me just see if I read it again, if the words justify what I said. He says that even if we hold on the second line that mukta kola gam achilu v'gam tiltul, it's all part of one indivisible entity, but the isa tiltul of gzeras mukta einam gzeras hotza el shem yovel ishtamish v'isa tiltul shu gzeras kelim hu shenemer bo mishum oto hotza. Okay, so it's not the way I say it. He has a different approach. All right, Rav Osai, that's as far as this week is concerned. Next week is Parshas Vayera, my correct.